The next one is emergency preparedness. And again, this is a state function. You are probably aware, may not, I hope that you're aware that we maintain an emergency response team, an area. So if there's any incident that happens in the state, we maintain capabilities to be able to go in and help respond to that incident. And we also, of course, maintain that capability with Savannah Riverside with an extra additional focus, so to speak. We actually have people in that emergency preparedness area with an L or a Q security clearance so that they don't have any access issues if there is an emergency or an incident. And we also talk with the site on a regular basis, quarterly. And we have different frequent scenarios where we set up imaginary situations and conduct our response so that we make sure we're always prepared. Okay. So the third bullet is environmental monitoring, and this is also it's a little bit of a special twist. Because it's not typical, but we have an extra here, and the extra is that the state actually conducts independent environmental monitoring on and around the Savannah River site. So that's soil and groundwater and air and river sediment. We take samples of milk and all kinds of different media on and around the site and analyze that information and actually produce a yearly report. And Jennifer Hughes is actually here with us today. Jennifer's with our DHEC office in Aiken, and all of that is done out of Jennifer's area. So, but again, that report is on our website. We update it yearly, and that report shows that for all of the different media that any radioactivity or chemical concerns for those media are not showing any danger to the public. And then the last bullet is cleanup. And again, you've heard from Rob, soil and groundwater, that's in our federal facility agreement. That's really our tri-party agreement. A lot of it is done out of that agreement, but it's EPA and DOE and DHEC. So all of those wonderful things that Rob talked about, we share in that. I won't be shy to point that out, but we've really worked hard with that tri-party agreement on the soil and the groundwater to make tremendous strides. You were asking about the number of sites. It's about over 77% of those contaminated areas from previous industrial practices, really before the environmental regulations were in place. About 77% of those sites have a remedy in place due to the hard work there. And then the last one is that we're still focusing on cleanup of legacy waste. A lot of transuranic and high-level waste that has built up over the years. And we have some tools and some requirements to oversee the working down and the risk reduction of that waste. So, but again, I just wanted to give you a feel for all of the ways that DHEC is involved and really, the soil and the groundwater is the one that we work with EPA on. All of the other things are state-led and state-led activities. So for the soil and the groundwater cleanup, again, a lot of that is handled under our tri-party agreement, so the federal facility agreement, and each year, DOE and the state and EPA take a fresh look at the scope of work for the upcoming years. And so in some ways, you might hear some criticism about, you know, milestones that we've set for cleanup in the past, and, you know, they're too rigid. And actually, even if you hear that mindset and when people talk about national budget, I think really our tri-party agreement is protected from that, because we do take a fresh look every year at the upcoming scope of work and what is really appropriate, and the milestones change and are rolling based on that fresh look every year. So, again, each year DOE proposes a scope of work for the upcoming years of cleanup for soil and groundwater. And DOE actually did that recently, proposing again for the next few years. And I just wanted to note to you that recently, on January 30th, we wrote back to them saying, hey, we think we have comments here, but we are disappointed in the lack of new work or new scope that is coming into that soil and groundwater cleanup process. So, two things here. One, I think actually the lack of new work is we're a little bit of victims of our success. And let me explain what I mean by that. A couple of years ago, DHEC and EPA and DOE agreed to do an area closure concept, which meant that instead of looking at this little site and this little site and this little site, we would look at all the little sites in that big area and go after and mobilize once to close that large area. And it was extremely effective, and that's how we got a lot of the big areas closed. And again, just hugely successful. So now the only problem is now that a lot of those are done, many of those are done, and the ones remaining are still operating. And so it doesn't make a lot of sense to go out and close out an operating area. So there's not a lot left in terms of a big area to go after and close all at once. There are some things, but not a lot left there. So to be honest, it's a little bit difficult to pick out and mine out things out of those large areas that can be, that we can go forward and work on closure and cleanup of those areas. So that part is a challenge. The other part is that that yes, it's probably true that the national economy is depressing the money available, and so that's probably affecting why we're seeing not as much new work scope proposed. And so that's part wrapped up in our comment as well. But again, recently, our response to DOE was we'd like to see some more new work scope in that soil and groundwater process. And we'll see how they respond to us. Okay, for high-level waste, again, there's a huge volume of liquid hazardous and radioactive waste in those tanks that are aging at the site. It's the last big legacy waste stream that we have authority over, and it's the really one of the biggest focuses for us for that waste to be treated and for the tanks to be closed so that we don't have that risk sitting in South Carolina. So for tanks 12 and 16, the last time I told you that we were going into a dispute resolution because DOE had asked for an extension to that closure schedule, and we had denied that extension. So we're still in that informal dispute resolution process. We've had two meetings so far. But nevertheless, actually, we're working very hard with DOE and EPA to do some early reviews of the tanks 12 and 16 closure modules to be able to compress that schedule. So we're working hard to reduce the schedule, and we think we can be successful in that, even while we're in dispute over the extension request. And the last thing is that I always talk to you about budget for high-level waste, and for 2014 and 2015, our belief is that budget is way below what it needs to be for high-level waste to be able to address the risk and close the tanks on time in accordance with our milestones. We actually went up to D.C. on November 20th to talk to all of our South Carolina delegation. We had great discussions there. Our delegation is very supportive of our need for risk reduction in that area. The 2015 budget as it stands right now, and if Savannah River site has any, there may be some recent developments that I'm not aware of that may be encouraging, and I'd be glad to hear them, but the 2015 budget is very similar, it looks to me, like the 2014 budget. And the concern there is that That budget level really fuels minimal treatment. So if you have, if you look at the existing treatment of the defense waste processing facility, that glass making facility, and the existing salt waste treatment options, really this budget fuels those treatments at about half to a third of their potential capacity. And that's not nearly enough to be able to close, you know, get the waste out of the tanks treated and have the tanks closed on schedule. So to us, you know, you've got the capacity there. We need the money to be able to max out those existing capacities and get the new capacities and even additional online beyond that to be able to reduce the risk aggressively and close the tanks in accordance with the milestones that DOE committed to in our enforceable agreement. The 2015 budget to us does not appear to be able to support that kind of progress. So, you know, treatment is the key. If you don't have treatment, you don't reduce that risk and get the tanks closed. So treatment is the key, and we need the existing to ramp up. We need more money for the high-level waste system. And really, again, to maximize what's there, and when the new capacity comes online, the salt waste processing facility, to even ramp that up as high as possible. Again, what that does is it gets the waste treated, that risk reduced, empties the tanks so that they can be closed, and we close the door on that risk for South Carolina forever. So that is that's the goal, that's what's in our milestones, and that's what we need the money to do. Any questions?
I think I asked this question last October about this dispute resolution process, this tiered process. And I'm getting the kind of distinct feeling with three months gone and a couple of meetings that it's gone from informal to more informal. So I would be curious as to what leverage South Carolina has to apply DOE to meet these enforceable milestones. If we're in the kindness phase and the less kindness phase, and someday we might get angry these milestones aren't met, and DOE, and you're in the middle on this, holding up their hands and going, well, we only can spend what Congress appropriates. But if it's costing the U.S. government, the taxpayer, more money to wait and to run a facility at half its capacity really inefficiently, we know what that's all about. We've got OMB, you know, line item in these budgets, and so you can't, so DOE doesn't have, has its hands behind the back. It can't actually move money from one PBS to another. So without some kind of leverage here or pain, how are you ever going to get to achieve these milestones?
Right.
Or the biggest threat on the Savannah River side, which is high-level waste.
Right. And I mean, it's a shame we have to talk about pain.
Yeah.
But
how it works, you know.
No.
I speed, I get a ticket. Okay. They don't just ask me to slow down.
I agree completely. I agree. So. Apart from the dispute resolution process, we do have other mechanisms that have a milestone in it with stipulated penalties. And so the thing is that, for example, we have a salt stone permit that requires the site to close the tanks by those certain dates. And we have a wastewater closure plan that requires the site to close the tanks by those certain dates. The salt stone permit actually has a stipulated penalty in it of $35,000 per day. So now, we haven't reached the closure date yet. The closure date for those two tanks is September 30th of this year, 2015. Actually, so we're not there yet. But once we reach that date, we do have the ability to leverage those stipulated penalties. Again, it's not that we want the federal money, because that's taxpayer dollars for both of us. But if we have to go down that route, then we will, to be able to you know, fully use all the mechanisms that we have at our...
You mentioned you've had a couple of meetings with DOE in this informal process. What's been the outcome of these meetings? What progress have you made in these meetings?
They've shared information with us. We have a better understanding of where they were at the time. It's not causing us to change our previous decision. And so we're still where we were, that we don't think that the extension well, we stand by our decision not to grant the extension that was requested. So we will follow out the rest of that dispute resolution process. You know, we are having some other discussions at the same time, you know, to talk to the UE, and I'm encouraged by those recent discussions about, you know, looking to see if we can craft a solution. But we don't necessarily feel that we're bound to the dispute resolution process, but we are at this time committed to
Well, who is invoking the dispute resolution process, DOE or South Carolina? You have the agreement, the milestone, right? You don't have to go to disputes resolution for that. They do. Or are they invoking the disputes resolution process?
Well,
they're disputing your decision not to extend
the
date,
right? Right. So they actually did invoke the dispute resolution process. Our federal facility agreement has it in there, and that's what we signed up to do. So we feel, as you know, a good faith effort. Right now, we're committed to working through that process. But at the same time, we have also those other mechanisms that are available to us and they're ready for us. And so we have those in our back pocket. We can pull them out if we need to kind of parallel.
Well, when do you think you might need to? What's kind of the outcome of this? Where's the trigger date here or the event?
Well, obviously, we're hoping to be done with dispute resolution by September 30th of this year. Because that's, you know,
that's the time available.
Right.
Okay. So. Good luck with that. I mean that seriously. Any other questions?
Kelly, how much money are we talking about?
Money that's needed?
Yeah.
It's that would be a better question for the Department of Energy. So I think
just
FY,
the ballpark. We talk about
sure,
a lot of money.
Sure, it is a lot of money, and you know, I think for FY15, it's the last I heard they were getting $547 million. One of DOE's plans had $687 million as their need per year to get more on track. So that's quite a big difference.
Any other questions? Kelly's always very good. Thanks for the little additional part on Rob's EPA solar umbrella. That's very helpful.
The next speaker is Doug Hensie. As I said, I didn't tell him I wanted a budget presentation until Monday, and I am thrilled that he's actually brought slides. So we're gonna you can make this as long or as short as you want, Doug, and then we'll decide if we've had enough.
All right.
I really appreciate it.
Again, my name is Doug Hensie. I'm the Assistant Manager for Mission Support for the Department of Energy and Savannah River. I'm going to talk a little bit about the budget.
You broke it, Doug.
As I give you this presentation on the budget, I'm going to go beyond any semblance of expertise I have, because not only am I going to talk to you about the environmental management budget, but I'm also going to talk to you about the NNSA budget for the site for 15. So when I get to the NSA portion, I'm going to give you some explanation on what the budget is, but if you have any questions, I would ask that you ask them, but I'll take them back, and then Doug Dieroff, the manager for NSA at the site, will come in and answer any of those questions at a later time. I always start with this. This here is where the federal budget process is to show how confusing it is. We here are right here in the January time frame. So this inner circle would be what the execution year comes down to. So right there at the end of September, the president signs the appropriations for the upcoming fiscal year, and off you go execute. Well, we know we haven't had the president sign that since fiscal year 1997. So again this year, and I'll talk a little bit later, right, we didn't get an appropriation until the middle of December. And I'll go a little bit more why it's important, because the uncertainty determines how much work you can get, because it determines when you can start the work, okay? Second part on here is if you look on this next circle, this is the budget year,
So if you look at it right here in the January timeframe, you can see we're about to have the president release the fiscal year 16 budget. That occurs the first Tuesday in February. And as of right now, we haven't heard otherwise. The last several years, we haven't had the budget released until as late as until the end of March. But right now, we're still on track for that to be occurring in the February timeframe. And then the outer circle here, this is actually the planning year for fiscal year 17. And you can see pretty much as soon as the 16 budget request is released to Congress, then we'll start with the budget formulation for fiscal year 17. Okay, what do we have as far as challenges? Again, I just talked to you that we had a continuing resolution for the beginning of this year. That CR went through December 11th, couldn't quite get things situated by that time. So there was another short-term, several-day CR that went through the 13th, and then the omnibus was signed on December 13th. Karen referred to it as a cromnibus, a new term. We like to make new terms. And that's because the appropriations for this year are a combination of a continuing resolution and an omnibus. And the continuing resolution is for the Department of Homeland Security. You heard all the, or you may have heard about the issues with the immigration. So that organization, that appropriations is just a continuing resolution into February. The rest of the appropriations bills are omnibuses, and so we have full year funding for the remainder of the year. This here I'm not going to go over, but this is just on the next slide where it talks about the actual numbers for the environmental management program. This is just how it's broken up so that you can refer back to this when you see how the money is actually broken up. Okay, this is our budget for the year. First things I want to point out here is you see in the blue, these four categories, those are all lumped under this one category, this roll-up called SRS Risk Management Operations. And when you look at it, I have the fiscal year 14, what we actually got in 14, what we requested in 15, and then what the omnibus actually gives us. Now, when Congress does their appropriation, they appropriate at this risk management operation number here, and then the Office of Management and Budget goes back and splits that up into what you see in the blue. So from Congress's perspective, they're operating at this larger number. However, once OMB splits those up, that becomes legal control points. So we can't, even though Congress may intend, but I can't use that word, even though Congress does not put those restrictions on there, OMB can interpret the intention of Congress. And so they believe Congress really wanted these individual control points, even though that's not what the way the appropriations is. So right now, the reason there's nothing over here is because we're in the midst, and we only in the middle of December got the appropriation. We're going back and we're developing spend plans based on our technical baselines to basically split this up, and it'll go back to OMB, and then OMB will go and give us an apportionment in the amounts that are requested for those different accounts. You see, just from a numbers perspective, kind of go through there real quick. From 432, we asked for 416, we ended up with 398. Up here, we knew as we went in there that we actually had some carryover of funds in the nuclear materials, so that's why the number of 260 is a little less than for requested in 15 as opposed to 272, because that's in order for us to maintain the level of operations that we have. That's a little deceiving because people then say, well, you don't need as much. No, we need the same amount of money. It's just that we did have, and that money is now gone to make up, or it'll be gone when we finish this year here. Spent fuels, pretty much the same for the request. Solid waste, we requested less because we actually had some money for some infrastructure projects, and that's what we used that money for. The solid waste program itself is around a $45 million program. You heard earlier Rob talk about the D area ash basin and the proximity to the Savannah River. So underneath the soil and groundwater, this increase from the 55 to the 66 was to address the D area. It's roughly 90 acres, four large sites that are out there that we're starting to move ash, and then we have to cap those areas out there. So what we're looking at now is to actually see how we can realign those funds. Now, one of the things when you look at this here, you might have heard there was discussion. What is that eight? Why did we have a? You can't say a cut of $18 million, but why did we not get that $18 million that was requested? There actually was a markup in the House in the summertime that said because the spent fuel program is, we take from a non-proliferation perspective, we take material that comes in from NNSA. Well, the House marked up and said NNSA should pay some of that share. And so they marked down this area here, the risk management, and said NNSA will make up that money. Well, the only problem was between the time the House marked up and by what the actual came out in the omnibus, the language which directed NNSA to give us that money went away. And so, in effect, because there's no language there, we can't go back over to NNSA and say you owe us that money.
We did, it just didn't work.
So we tried. Believe we tried, but all the lawyers came in and said because the language is not there, it holds no water. So the only good part of this story is that in this year we also have the Highway Transportation Act, which again reduced the contribution we have to give for our pensions. Gives us interest rates that we have to use. So our pension contributions have been reduced. So in effect, even though this is below what we believe we need, our pension savings from not having to contribute as much, we should be able to cover and achieve the scope that we plan to do. The only problem is, it's a pay me now, pay me later. Just because you don't pay the pension doesn't mean that your liability goes down. It's just that in out years, you're going to have to pay more than you would have paid in order for that to
I have a question on that. I have a waste of this.
Yeah, I've got that. Can I get to
one? Yeah, well, the question I have is the president's request for fiscal 2015 was 460. That wasn't the amount fully operated.
No. You got this here is not liquid waste. This risk management operations is for nuclear material, spent fuel, solid waste, soil, and groundwater. Radioactive waste, DWPF, salt waste processing, that's what I'm just getting to.
Okay.
That's down here. Okay? So, yeah, these numbers here all are about these programs up here in the blue. Okay? So now coming down here to the radioactive liquid tank waste, this is where you're talking about operations of defense waste processing facility, tank farms, the actinide removal process, and all of the operations in the high-level waste program are there. Then you also have here, this here is the salt stone disposal unit. That's construction of one of the big mega vaults in which we put the low-activity waste after it's gone through EFD, MCU, and or then salt waste processing facility. And then this here is construction of the salt waste processing facility. Things to point out, in fiscal year 14, the salt zone disposal unit activity, any construction was included in this number of 566. So when you look at these columns here, you kind of add these together to compare it to what you had in 14. We requested $588 million. Unfortunately, Congress only appropriated $577. So we actually, and we agree with Shelley, we believe that we should be, we'd like to see even more funds, but in this case here, we didn't even get the funds that we asked for. And again, that was, we don't control Congress, so that's $11 million scope reduction that we have to take into account in our program. Again, just like we talked about the upper program, we have pension savings down here that we're also trying to feed back into the program to do more scope in that respect.
But my my question was in that